Just over 40 years ago, a huge record was recorded with the title of Angel Baby. Not only was it a huge record, but it was recorded in an airplane hangar. The group that recorded it was Rosie and the Originals, and on the phone with me right now is Rosie Hamlin. Hi, Rosie.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing just wonderful, thank you.
Great. I want to get into the history about Angel Baby and a lot of other things, but what are you doing now? What's some of the latest projects that you have now?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I've been still working on my life story that I hope that will be a book or one day a movie. I was working on a project in San Diego, California at the Barrio Logan where I tried a music program on young children, between the ages of 10, 11, up to 17. And it works really well with young people to help them form their self-esteem and, you know, their social skills and things like that.
Now, did you say you tried? Is that program ongoing? Or?
That program is ongoing. I started it up, and I will be doing a conference in September about the program. It should be out in other organizations, and I'll be available on a consultancy basis to start up the program. The conference seminar that I'm doing in September is for the Latino Behavioral Sciences Committee, and it will be an international conference. And I'll present the program because it helps young people to identify with their background and be creative and express themselves and, like I said, form social skills. And it's all about anger management and coping skills and things like that. But music is so wonderful, it heals, you know, and so it works.
Sounds like a great program.
Oh, I'll be doing that. And the band and I are doing a lot of concerts. And
website? You've got a new website?
We've got the greatest website. I'm not bragging because I didn't create it. My son John is the creator of the website. And he monitors it. It's ongoing. He says it'll be forever. He says it's a tribute to Mom. It's RosieandTheOriginals.com. I always say Rosie and the Originals, but it's actually T-H-E, so it's RosieandTheOriginals.com.
That's an easy one to remember.
Oh, it's got pictures, history, biography, band things, news updates.
Jokes?
Jokes, concert updates. It's got my paintings in a gallery. I was going to be an artist before I decided to be a singer, and I had a scholarship for art, and I was not allowed to take the scholarship. My father said, no, you know, girls don't do that in, you know, at my age. I think I was 13 or 14. He says, well, no, girls, you know, don't do that. They get married and all that stuff. They were very old-fashioned. So to keep expressing my creativity, I guess I just stepped into music.
Well, it's interesting. The girls don't do art, but they definitely make top five hits, huh?
Well, I don't think they expected that either. But you know, it's all there on the website, the history, the art, the van. My life looks like an open book now.
You started out in Oregon, is that correct?
I was born in Klamath Falls, Oregon, and we moved to Anchorage, Alaska when I was around a year old. We stayed in Anchorage, Alaska till I was around 11 or 11 and a half and moved to National City just a little teeny bit south of San Diego. And that's where I spent the rest of my time growing up and created Angel Baby.
So when did you actually write Angel Baby?
I was 14. Hmm. It was a poem.
Poem to a boyfriend, perhaps?
Yes. It was, you know, it was one of those puppy love things, and I couldn't express myself at all, and we just sort of saw each other at family get-togethers and functions because his family sort of tied in with my family, you know, through baptisms or stuff like that, and we just danced and became boyfriend and girlfriend, and he would take me to the movies, and we had chaperone wherever we went.
Mm-hmm.
So our best thing was we could sit out on the porch and maybe hold hands.
Maybe.
Maybe, and talk. And so during that time, I wrote this poem about him. And then later on, I got a piano, an old piano that my mother bought for me. And I learned the four chord progression and then I put the music to Angel Baby, and then I record it when I was 15.
What happened, let's say, between when you were writing it, before you recorded it? I'm assuming you did some sort of performing in the area, perhaps.
Before I wrote the song, I was starting to be interested in music. Well, I'd been interested in music since I was a little kid, and I used to sing and do things in school, little school plays and stuff like that, and glee club and all that. And I remember one of the local kids that we kind of hung out together told me that there was this great place called Bostonia Ballroom. That was my friend Alfred Barrett, and he was a sax player. And he said that, well, he couldn't have been more than 2 years older than me, but he said, oh, you've got to see this place out in the country. It's called Bostonia Ballroom. All sorts of great artists go there, and Brenda Lee had been there, and just, oh, I forget. Gee, just all kinds of people. I called this ad in the paper one day just on a whim, and some folks were looking for singers and musicians for a band for Bostonia Ballroom, and I said, oh, my God. So I called them up, and they said, well, how old are you? And I said, 16 or 17, something like that, you know. And they said, well, you sound awfully young. Can you sing? And I said, oh, yeah, I can sing. They said, well, what's the influence that you grew up with or what? You know, and I said, well, Hank Williams, Gail Storm, you know, a lot of people from that era. And they said, well, can you sing something over the phone? And I sang Dark Moon. And they said, can you be at one of our rehearsals? And I said, oh, I'd love to. And I got the address, and then I told my best friend, her name was Marietta, and I said, how can I get there? I think it's close by. And she says, yeah, it's not too far, but we got to get like a ride over there. So she told her mother, and I told my mother, that we were going to go babysitting. And they both said, okay, that's fine, as long as her mother drops you guys off and picks you up. So we went and got dropped off, and nobody asked questions. You know, in those days, it was a pretty nice neighborhood and wasn't very far. So we went there, and they were having a band rehearsal. And they could have been mid-20s, late-20s, I don't know. To me, they were older folks. And I sang some of the songs that I had heard my dad singing, or that I sang along with, or heard on the radio and stuff. And they played, and it was sort of a country folk band. And then we went to play on the weekend. And I got to sing a couple of songs, and I was trying to learn harmony, or they were trying to teach me harmony. Stuff like Crazy Arms and, you know, just some really old tunes. And at the end of the thing, it was just like so exhilarating. It was wonderful that I performed at Bostonia Ballroom, and I didn't even think about getting paid. I was just so excited. And I think they passed the hat around, and I think I came home with $20 in my pocket. And I remember my mother asking me, how much did you make for babysitting? You were gone till almost 1 o'clock in the morning, and I don't really like that. And I said, oh, I made $9, and so did my friend. And she says, well, that's pretty good. That's not bad at all.
Sounds like you had it all worked out there. So now you're performing, obviously a little younger than 16. Did you do that a lot then? How did you make that happen? I mean, how did you make it work?
I didn't do that very often. I only went to the Bostonia Ballroom, three or four times. And then we moved. We had moved from the area we were in up to a certain area called Paradise Hills, and that's when that occurred. Then when we moved back to our original house in National City, I was now at a different school again, and my parents were divorcing and all that. So, let's see, there were family get-togethers and parties, and some of my cousins that were younger than me were starting up a little band. And I think my cousin Lawrence was about 12 or 13, and he played lead guitar. And my cousin Mario was a year or so older than him, and I might have been around that same age, 14, I think. And I got involved with the Let's Make a Little Band. We never did have a name for the band. It was just the cousin's band. And we played for lots of little functions like the church thing, you know, where they have dances for teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
We played at all the family parties, which there were tons of parties because the family was so large. Then there came the time when my Uncle Albert says, Gloria, his girlfriend, she has some guys that, you know, they were older. They were like 20 and 21. And she knows some guys over in San Diego that play music. Do you want to meet them? And I said, yeah. And so she got the phone numbers for me. One was Noah Tafoya. One was David Ponce. And David Ponce was the older guy. He was at least 21 or 22. So they came over on a weekend, like a Saturday or Sunday afternoon, and they brought David Ponce, Noah Tafoya, and Tony Gomez, who played guitar and or bass, and we just had a jam session. And then we decided we liked each other doing this jam session in the garage, and by then we'd moved the piano out into the garage. We had jam sessions every weekend. And then I told them that I'd written the song, and I'd already put it to a four-chord progression, and we rehearsed it over and over and over and over.
Got a lot of practice time in.
Uh-huh.
I'm speaking with Rosie Hamlin of Rosie and the Originals, and we're just about to the point where you've rehearsed the song Angel Baby, and you're probably getting ready to see if you can't just lay down some tracks and record it.
That's right.
So how did you get hooked up at the airport hangar to do your session?
During that summer, it seems like so much stuff happened during that summer, but it all happened in summer vacation. And we practiced in the garage and learned all sorts of current tunes and stuff. And sometimes Gloria would even sing with me. And I don't know if she really ever went on to be a singer. I've lost touch and I can't find her. But we did a lot of that, and then we had a few parties. We played at some high school parties and a USO hall, and we thought we were doing pretty good, and we did a couple of Battle of Bands, I think, in San Diego. We said, well, gee, we need to record this song. And one of us, and I don't remember who, said, there's no recording studios around here at all in San Diego, but let's try to figure out maybe in Los Angeles. So somebody came up with the idea that we would go all the way to Los Angeles. Well, we didn't even know if we could get the gas money up to do that. So Los Angeles seemed like so far away. We figured that'd be like an all-day deal. Somebody came up with this guy in San Marcos that had an old recording studio. Well, it wasn't old, it was new. He was trying to make a recording studio. He was an airplane mechanic, and he was going to retire from being an airplane mechanic. So he had one whole corner section kind of blocked off, so it had a lot of echo in it. And he just had this, I guess it was two-track at that time, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it could have been two-track.
Or is there one track?
Yeah, actually, there's a lot of things that were recorded just on one track, so that's possible, too.
That's probably what it was, because we went there. It took us, like, forever to get there. We had to find our way through pastures of cows and all sorts of stuff, and I remember we piled all into one car, and that was really hard because we were... But then in those days, they didn't have seatbelt laws, so we were all piled into this car and making jokes about, now we're on a real wild goose chase, you know, we're out in the fields with cows and everything. Where in the heck are we going? And so we get there, we find this place, and then we had asked Alfred. During this time, we had gotten Alfred Barrett, my friend, to play sax with us. So he was our actual sax player. But he also had his own band, and he also had commitments at home, like, you know, where is he? We're calling him, you're not here. He said, well, my mother won't let me go. I'm not done mowing the yard and raking the leaves and everything, you know. And if I don't get this done, I'm in big trouble. I don't think I'm going to make it, because by then it was pretty late and we were supposed to start. So we start recording, and we have to do it over and over and over. And in the middle, we don't know what to do. Well, we should have a sax solo, but it's not there. So Noah, the guitar player, says, Well, Tony, I think you played sax before. Let me show you how it goes. And the guy there at the studio had all the equipment. So he brings out a sax, and Noah shows Tony Gomez how to play some notes. And he really wasn't a sax player, but he tried to play what Noah said.
Mm-hmm.
And we recorded it. And then I did have kind of a cold. I was kind of nasally. And it must have took us all day long to record Angel Baby.
How many takes do you think it took?
Oh, 40 or 50.
Wow.
And then when we think we're done and we're all tired, the guy goes, well, what do you want to put on the other side? And I'm like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, we had a song half written, but it wasn't finished. And that was funny because Angel from Above was supposed to be the B-side. It wasn't done yet. I had not finished writing it. And so there was a guy with us. His name was Bluford Wade. He had a little jazz group that he played with, and he sang blues and jazz. And so, I don't know, I think it was David or Noah said, well, why don't we just let Bluford sing something on the other side? Fine, let's do that. And so he ad-libbed. They just played whatever, the raw stuff, you know, just very raw, oh, blues. And Bluford just ad-libbed some stuff for the other side because we never thought that it would be a collector's item like it is now.
Well, I guess that explains why there's such a tremendous difference between the two sides.
Right.
Do you remember how much that recording session cost to do out at the hangar?
Yeah, it was about $25.
Well, that's not bad.
We thought it was.
So you've recorded Angel Baby. You've been probably given a tape off of their one-track recorder, and it's time to shop it around, I guess, huh?
We got an acetate.
Mm.
We got a couple of acetates. And let's see, when we got back home, the next night we had a big party to celebrate. We played the acetate for the party, for everybody, you know. It got a scratch in it. We didn't know how it got a scratch in it, but acetates were very... you know, you had to be very careful with them. You couldn't play them to death. They didn't last very long, you know.
Right.
And the other acetate, it got lost or mangled or something, you know, in our, just having a good time, I guess. And so we took it to Los Angeles a bunch of times. We tried to get somebody to listen to us. Well, first we took it to local disc jockeys in San Diego. Nobody would play it. They said, yeah, that's nice, but it doesn't have a label. You have to get a label. Oh, okay. So then we decide, well, okay, we need to go to a recording company and see if somebody will give us a label. And so we had to go to Los Angeles. So then we spent several weeks going to Los Angeles at least twice a week. This was very frustrating. We didn't know where to go, what to do. We went all the way up there dressed up and stuff. And then we'd look in a telephone book and just drive here and there. Meanwhile, our supply of gas money was running out. Everybody would say, do you have an appointment? Well, we didn't know anything about appointments.
You were just there.
Yeah, we were just there. We thought that's how you get discovered. We got turned down by every door we knocked on. So then we were, you know, pretty disheartened. We went back to San Diego and we had to think about this again. Okay, now what do we do? We can't get it played because there's no label. No label wants to talk to us. So we went to a local department store that had a record store department. And in those days, you could go into the record store department and they had the little booth where you could actually play your 45 before you bought it and listen to it and see if you really wanted it. A lot of kids would just go there and hang out and play the 45s and listen to them. And dance around and enjoy themselves. It was kind of like a hangout.
Mm-hmm.
So then we talked to the manager there at the record department. And we're asking him, now, could you sell this? And he says, well, how? You know, it doesn't have a label on it. We're, oh, my gosh. So we're saying, well, if we made some 45s, if we could figure out how to make the 45s and give them to you, maybe 10 or 15 at a time, do you think you might, you know, be able to sell them? He said, let me play it over the loudspeaker and let me hear it. So he plays it over the loudspeaker, and all of a sudden all these different kids that are hanging out are saying, Oh, where can we buy that? Oh, that is great. That is cool, or whatever the terms were in those days, you know. And as he's listening to it, and he's starting to see that kids are liking it, in comes a rack jobber guy for Highland Record Company, but he's putting in 45. And he's seeing all this commotion going on, and he says to the store manager, who's singing that? Whose 45 is that? And he points to us, and so the guy comes over and gives us his card and says, we're going to make stars of you guys. We love that. Meet us tonight at Joe Webb's Highway House and bring your master. And so we did.
It was just lucky that he happened to be in the store at the same time that you were there.
Maybe, I don't know. All I know is that we gave him the master. We went there that evening, gave him the master without a contract or anything. We didn't know what we were doing. Yeah. And, you know, of course we had his card, and he was with Highland Record Company. His name was Murray Cohen, and he was with another guy, and I forget his name. And so, like, a couple of weeks go by, and we're going, oh, my God, we lost it. What happened? And we're thinking, well, we better call this guy or somebody. And this particular weekend, I was spending the whole weekend with my friend Gloria in Point Loma, California. And we were going to go to the beach and have all sorts of fun, and then the band was going to play that evening and all that on the beach.
Right.
Which we did quite a bit, a lot of beach parties. And we're listening to KDAY, and it's like early morning, and we've got our pajamas on, and we're drinking hot chocolate, and we're listening to K-Day. And all of a sudden, Alan Freed is saying something about, and here's a record by a 14 or 15, I forget what he said at this point, 14 or 15-year-old girl from National City, California, Angel Baby. And he's playing it, and we just start jumping up and down, get on the phone and call the rest of the guys in the band. And we're just like, we can't believe it. We're hearing our song for the very first time on the radio. And he's talking about, and this is going to be a big hit. And then he started playing it like 10, 15 times a day. So then we really try to, you know, we better get in touch with those people. And so we do, and the rest is history.
Well, now, Alan Freed, he was only at KDAY for just a short amount of time, actually, but he was the guy that was breaking records at that time at KDAY into hits, because he had come from New York and got in a little trouble over there and then came out here to Southern California, and if he was playing it, it was a hit.
Yeah.
So that was the right person to have a record with, for sure.
Oh, I know.
What I'm kind of curious about is how the small record company like Highland got Alan Freed to break the record.
I think it might have had something to do with the publishing, which they gave him a great portion of as a payola, and that was not uncommon in those days. But I later did a lot of research and figured it all out that, yeah, Alan Freed was going to get some publishing money from it and a lot of kickbacks. It had something to do also with publishing Figure Music. Figure Music was a guy named Jack Hook, who was also back east, and so he gave Alan Freed a great portion of money from my royalties, which I never saw for a long period of time, in order to break the record.
So Freed and this guy by the name of Hook, maybe they just co-owned Figure Music then. And
right.
I see. Well, Highland Records, besides being a local label, was a fairly small label, at least up to that point. Did you ever get any contact with any of the other artists that were on Highland Records?
No, I never did. It wasn't until, gee whiz, let me think, late 80s, that I was able to actually find out how many people or who actually was also on the Highland label.
There were some good groups that were on there, like the Wilsons, Sandra and the Highlanders. There was a doo-wop group called the Precisions that was on there with a guy by the name of Bobby Saunders. I don't know if any of those are familiar to you.
No, not really.
Most of them were probably pretty local. I also know Don and Dewey had one release on Highland.
Were they? I don't know about that. I've known Don and Dewey most of my life. I didn't know if they were or not. They may have.
I'm talking with Rosie Hamlin of Rosie and the Originals and Angel Baby fame and other things as well. And we've just gotten past where they've recorded and are now getting lots of airplay on local KDAY in Southern California. Alan Freed spinning that one and breaking it wide open. What was next? You had a record. It was a big hit. You probably had to sign a contract.
We signed a contract. It wasn't a legal contract. It seemed to be legal, but it really wasn't because I was awarded a court. At some point, I had lived with my aunt and uncle during my parents' divorce. So my mother wasn't actually my legal guardian. When the time came months down the road, after many free concerts and no money, I sought out an attorney, and he looked into it and said, well, who wrote the song? I said, I did. And, well, we had to go to court. We had to break the contract. Before we broke the contract, they offered us a second contract. I was advised that I should not sign it. Some of the other band members wanted to sign it. And myself and Noah, who was my boyfriend, the lead guitarist, did not want to sign it. We'd gotten a little bit of legal advice that we weren't going to get any money anyway. And I think it was a contract for something like 2 cents a record for 20, 50 years, something really strange. And so then the band broke up because of that. And then I sought out the attorney that tried to handle it, but he wasn't a music attorney.
Rosie, tell us about some of the touring and concerts that you did on the West Coast.
One of the first free concerts, it was Murray Cohen, the guy that had met us down there at the music store, was now assigned to me to take me all over the place and do lots of radio promotion. So after school and on weekends, I was driven everywhere you could think of and fed okay. You know, kids eat hamburgers and french fries and milkshakes. And and we'd drive up and down the coast going to music stores and all that and doing radio stations, doing all kinds of promotions. And the first concert I ever did was the Wink Martindale show at Pacific Ocean Park. And I didn't get paid for that either. But he said, well, that was okay because we had to do this. And we kept doing so many of those that when I did get an attorney, he found out that the contract was not legal because my mother was not my legal guardian and my aunt was. And the first contract was signed without my mother's signature anyhow.
Who was actually listed as the writer on that originally?
Oh, I forgot to mention that night that we met with the guy from Highland Record Company when he discovered us in San Diego, he said that, there's a lot of record companies that would love to just take a band and they say they're going to do all sorts of things for you and make you a star. But what they really want to do is take the singer away from the band, and that way they control them completely, and they ace out the band, and nobody gets any money. So the way to keep you guys together is you are the singer. You will be listed as the singer and get your royalties with your BMI. But as far as on the record, we should put David Ponce, the band guy, the oldest guy, we'll put him in there as the writer, and this way it'll just tie you guys all up and they can't tear you apart.
Well, that's an interesting spiel.
Yeah.
When you ended up having to go to court because David's name was on there as the writer to get it removed, what was his opinion of that?
What happened was, that's where I was going and I kind of lost my train of thought there, but what happened was I had written the song before I ran into the band, before we all met and became a band. So when I'd written that, my best friend had a tape recorder. I didn't have a tape recorder. She had just one of these little small things, and I suppose they might have been kind of unique for that era, or at least for our age group. And she'd come over and she'd tape the song for me while I was playing it on the piano and singing it. And then she gave me the tape, And then I knew about copyright, but I didn't know about legal copyright. I knew about poor man's copyright, which is you mail the tape to yourself and never open it. And that's what stood up in court, and it was dated to inside.
That was good thinking on your part.
I guess, and I don't know how I ever came up with that.
I'm talking with Rosie Hamlin of Rosie and the Originals. We've just gotten past some of the copyright issues, although I suspect that that's something that's ongoing for quite a while, and it didn't just stop in the early 60s.
No. After that particular time, going to court and everything, and then the band broke up, the name David Ponce stayed on the record for the longest time. It was probably because a lot of people were bootlegging it only, I don't know if they were calling it bootlegging that time. Then Jackie Wilson saw me at a show at the United Artists Theater in Los Angeles, and I only had Noah with me, and we were working with the Johnny Otis Band. And Noah was being like my band leader and directing, you know, what songs I was going to sing, and Johnny Otis was more or less becoming my mentor, and I worked with him a lot during that early time. Jackie Wilson came to my dressing room and introduced himself, and I was just like thrilled, completely thrilled and excited. And he said, well, you know, you've got this giant hit. What are your next songs, or do you have new songs released already? And I said, no, I've just gotten out of the contract with Highland Record Company. He said, well, you need to go with Brunswick. And I'm on Brunswick, and Nat Tarnopol is my manager. I'll arrange it. He said, just after the show, I'll have Nat come over and meet you. And so I met Nat Tarnopol, and he says, yeah, definitely. We'll fly you out to New York, and we'll record you. Do you have material? And I said, oh, yeah. Well, I really didn't, but I said, oh, yeah. I have maybe a couple of songs.
A good answer.
Mm-hmm. And so they flew me and Noah, my guitar player boyfriend, and my aunt, who was acting kind of like my guardian or chaperone. So we all get up there, and we're staying at the Park Sheraton Hotel, and then we get the worst storm in 100 years or something, and we get snowed in for 2 weeks. So Nat Tarnopol asked me if we have enough material to record, and Noah and I look at each other like, oh, my God. And we go, yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah, we've got a lot of fun. So he says, okay, how about 8 o'clock tomorrow morning? And we just agree with that. And he says, well, Noah can show the studio band what it is, and we'll write out the arrangements as it goes along. And I said, oh, okay. So then Noah and I, because we're both chaperoned and we're very young, we sit, his room was across the room from me and my aunt, and we sit on the steps with his guitar playing quietly till 4 a.m., writing at least 7 or 8 more songs for the recording session at 8 o'clock. And that's where Lonely Blue Nights came from.
Did Lonely Blue Nights ever get recorded on Highland?
There were several songs that we had done after Angel Baby. I think they were done at the very same, yeah, they were done at the very same place out there in San Marcos, I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong. Yeah, because I don't recall ever going to any other studio. And we did like a couple more. We did Lonely Blue Nights, Angel from Above, Why Did You Leave Me? And I think, yeah, We'll Have a Chance. So then those tracks, somehow Highland ended up with those tracks, but now I had a new contract with Brunswick. So Brunswick put them out on the new album, Lonely Blue Nights, and then way later during, well, not way later, during that same year, I think Highland slipped them out as raw as they were just with me playing piano and as I did on Angel Baby.
So in other words, then, when you look at a discography of your material, it makes you think that you released one after the other on Highland when in fact you just released Angel Baby, went to Brunswick, recorded for Brunswick, and then once Highland saw you recording for Brunswick, they went ahead and released what they had in the can.
Yes.
So you've got an album that you're doing in the studio based on some songs that you wrote the night and early morning before.
Mm-hmm. And just a few that we had, you know, already written since Angel Baby had been released.
So Brunswick's intent then was not only to put Lonely Blue Nights out as a single, but also to put out an album just to showcase your material.
Right.
And so Lonely Blue Nights did fairly well on the charts, got up to number 66 on Billboard. And the album, now it didn't sell quite as well as maybe they thought, huh?
Well, you know what was very interesting, and I've tried to piece it together all these years, is that when it was in demand and people were trying to get it, nobody could get it. And I found out later that they only printed up less than 1,000, maybe like 500 copies, and put them out there. And it was almost like they were trying to stop me. But what I think may have happened, and this is like I should have known, but I was so young I didn't know. The Jack Hook guy that was tied up with Highland, he was also present at our Brunswick recording.
That just ties it back then, I see. I mean, I don't want to badmouth Highland,
no.
It all seems like it came back to the publishing rights to Highland and then Brunswick connection with Highland, and that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And I do remember that Sid Talmadge from Highland Record Company called me when I was going to Brunswick and said, if you don't record any more songs with Highland Record Company, and if you think you're going to be a big star going with Brunswick, I'm going to blackball you. You will never record again in your lifetime.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot for somebody that's fairly young to hear.
Yeah, it really is. And I just thought, oh, he's just being an angry guy, you know.
Well, maybe not.
No. See, I didn't know what all was involved. Then I found out way later that all of my publishing became owned by Morris Levy, and I'm sure you're familiar with that name.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So now you get a picture of what really happened.
That's just not the ideal circumstances that you'd choose if you had your choice.
Right. It wasn't until 1988 that anybody would actually take my case, trying to figure out what to do with it, because Morris Levy was still in control of
mm-hmm.
Roulette and ABC Music and all that. And a lot of entertainers were being intimidated and threatened and whatever by Morris Levy. So I was not able to get an attorney to even bother with me.
Just due to the sheer power of the people involved.
Uh-huh. And when he went to prison on the RICO Act, then that's when other attorneys thought that they might take my case.
To kind of wrap that part of it up, when did you finally prevail then in the court system with the copyright?
I think I'm probably still fighting with it.
I'm speaking with Rosie Hamlin of Rosie and the Originals, and we were just talking about royalties and some of the issues involved. We're going to move to a different subject. After Brunswick Records, you recorded on a small label called Cal Globe. Tell me about that.
I had a manager, his name was Carl Castor. That was after the Originals broke up, and then it was myself and Noah Tafoya, the guitar player, who was my boyfriend, and his brother Johnny, and then Johnny's friend Henry. And now we were the Originals, you know, a new batch of Originals. And we did a couple of car shows local San Diego, ran into a guy named Carl Castor who was putting on the car shows. And he was such a nice person, and he liked us a lot. We wanted him to be our manager. He remained our manager for a period of time, and then he had to move up Northern California, and his partner in another type of business took over our management. And whatever it was that caused them to part ways, then we had this guy, Danny Millsap. And Danny wanted to record us, and I think he created the Cal Globe label just for that one particular time we recorded. We went into a studio that belonged to the Cascades, or else their manager. I think it was their manager, and I believe his name was Andy DiMartino. There were brothers, so I can't remember the other brother's name, but one of them owned the studio and one of them managed the Cascades. I think that's how it was. And we recorded Kinda Makes You Wonder, which Johnny and I co-wrote, my little brother-in-law. He was 14 and I was 15. And then we recorded My One and Only Love, and I believe he may have written the whole tune. I don't remember if I co-wrote with him on that. the Cascade filled in the different instruments that we needed, and so they played on those two songs. Now, that's come up as a release on the CD that Ace Records is putting out. They're going to put it out because it had only been out just a short while, didn't get much exposure, and it's one of those rare records that record collectors seem to like, and so it's going to be out on the new CD.
And for people that are trying to place the Cascades, they were the group that did Rhythm of the Rain.
Right, Rhythm of the Falling Rain.
Rhythm of the Falling Rain, a great song, and had quite a few good follow-ups to that as well.
Oh, they were great.
So did you do any touring at all with the Cascades, or was it just a one-shot deal?
No, we never did. I believe we did a couple of shows in San Diego with them. They were also a local San Diego group. But we didn't do any touring.
Now, you had appeared on American Bandstand, probably early 1961. Tell me about that appearance.
I went back east, and I went by myself. I had a chaperone, of course.
Of course.
And there was a couple of things I did during that whole weekend, so it was real hectic for me. It's hard to remember, but I got to meet Dick Clark, and I lip-synced to Angel Baby, and then we had all the kids out there also, you know, dancing and all that. During that same weekend, they had, what was his name? Del Shannon. Del Shannon, I can't remember if he was on Bandstand at that very same time, but he and I were linked up to this contest. There was a win a date with Rosie and win a date with Del Shannon. So somebody had won a date with him and a date with me. And my boyfriend, I'm sure he didn't know about that, but it was dinner and a show, and we had chaperones anyhow, and that was kind of neat. So we went out to dinner and saw like a dinner music show. On that same weekend, we went to a children's hospital and sang for children that were ill. And that's about all I can remember that whole weekend.
Do you have a copy or a tape of the show?
No, I don't. I've tried to get one several times, and I've heard that some of that stuff from that period of time was lost, and I just don't know. There's other people that have tried to get a copy of their tape, but they haven't been able to.
I've actually heard the same story from a couple different artists. I think there's some legitimacy to that, that some of them have either been lost or misplaced forever or something. So it sounds like his archive is not totally complete.
That's sad.
Yeah, it is, because a lot of good performances that we may never see again.
Mm-hmm.
I need to dispel a rumor here, too. I've had several people call requesting a song by Rosie and Ron called So Dearly, and the flip side that I like as well called Bring Me Happiness. I know that that's Ron Holden.
No, it isn't.
Oh, it's not Ron Holden?
No.
So I don't know anything then. I thought it was Ron Holden, and I knew it wasn't you. Do you have any idea who it is then?
No, I don't. Someone told me long ago, and I cannot remember what the names of the people were, but for the longest time, people thought it was Ron Holden and myself, and I had never actually paid attention to the song more than it was a nice song or something. And then when I realized people were thinking it was me, I started saying, well, no, it's not me. Evidently, a lot of record collectors and fans out there had thought it was me all this time.
For some reason, I thought it was Ron Holden because it was the same label that he was recording on.
I asked Ron. We used to work together a lot. We knew each other as kids, actually, growing up in music. I first met Ron Holden on tours when I was probably 15, and I'd known him all through getting married and his children and my children and all that. And it wasn't until maybe 10 years before he passed away that I said, Ron, did you ever know who recorded that, or was that you and some other gal or something? And he said, wasn't me. I thought it might have been you. No, it wasn't me either. We had a good laugh over that because we couldn't figure out who did it and why they did it, you know.
I guess I've got to do is figure out who it was. I'll have to try to do some research on that.
I'm sure there are record collectors out there that know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you find out, I want to know.
Okay, you'll be the first to know after I know. I suppose that you're probably, as far as people that you've worked with, is a who's who in the record industry. Do you have any favorites of people that you worked with?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. One of my very first early favorites was Jackie Wilson. And, of course, a lot of people heard that in the different interviews I've done. He was very dynamic and magnetic and the most wonderful, energetic, just full of energy performer. And then Carla Thomas, she was another sweetheart in the early years. We worked 10 days straight, 6 shows a day back east on a large show, and she became my friend, the Marcells. I met them on that same show, and, you know, after 10 days working together, 6 shows a day, just practically living, you know, there, you become good friends. And I've recently run into one of the Marcells, one of the original Marcells, in the past 10 years several times on shows now. And the Penguins, the Olympics, they were always dear friends of mine. Johnny Otis was like my mentor. I've worked some with Chuck Berry, and he's always been extremely nice to me. And Chubby Checker. I could go on and on.
Yeah.
There are so many people. Sunny Knight was another very dear friend.
I suspect that you've worked with an awful lot of people over the years.
Yes, I have.
I have one thing that I've always wanted to ask you that's not real important as important things go, but I have a record that's by the Downbeats, and the song is called Rosie Baby. And the whole song is basically a tribute to you. It talks about my Rosie Baby and Angel Baby and all that. I just wondered if you'd ever heard of that one before.
No. Where did it come from and when was it recorded?
Well, it came off of one of those oldies albums that were released in the early to mid-60s. And it was just a budget label, but they put on a bunch of stuff from the Los Angeles area, based on what I can tell. And so it just happened to be on one of those that I found in a thrift store one time.
Oh my gosh, I would love to have a copy of it.
Well, I'll have to get you a copy of that, but is there any other songs or such that you know of that are tributes to you and or the song?
There was something Led Zeppelin did on Houses of the Holy. On their liner notes, the words make reference to a song that I recorded there at Brunswick, and I believe that they were doing rehearsals around that time, possibly in the same studio. It had something to do with Ooh Baby Baby, I forget. In the liner notes, if you read them, refer to some of the words in a song I wrote on the Lonely Blue Nights album, and they're saying something about Baby, please don't go. Ooh, 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 baby, please don't go. And then at the bottom of it, or else at the top of that song, it's this, where is Rosie from Rosie and the Originals, or whatever happened to Rosie. Yeah, and that was kind of cool.
I know that you had a quote that John Lennon did for you too, huh?
He recorded Angel Baby. He originally recorded it when he was doing some stuff with Phil Spector. And he was recording, I think, Boney Maroney and a bunch of oldies that he liked. And it was going to go on an album called Rock and Roll, I believe. I could be wrong, but I think that was going to be the title of it. And at the very beginning, as the song starts out, he's saying in an echoey voice to one of my all-time American favorite singers, something like that, to Rosie with love wherever she may be. And then he starts in, it's just like heaven. And so then, after he passed away, it was released on the Men Love Avenue album.
That was the mid-80s, wasn't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's
that
a pretty...
That was one of the greatest tributes.
We've talked so much about some of the old days and some of the history. We've got to get to the things that you're doing now. Where can we start?
The website? Did we mention the website?
Yeah, but let's do it again.
Okay. The webmaster is my son, John, and he's done the most fantastic job on the website, rosieandtheoriginals.com. We've got a forum in the back where you can ask questions and have them answered, sign the guest list, keep in touch with other musicians or find other people, or, you know, just ask questions and, you know, start a thread of a conversation. Got a gallery where all my artwork is, and it is for sale.
Tell me about your artwork.
Well, I was going to be an artist. I'd always been an artist since I was a little kid, and then I wasn't able to take the scholarship. I couldn't just be a singer. I'm an artist also. It's my way of relaxing and getting away from everything. And I love to do mountain scenery, all type of landscapes, seascapes, and animals. And people maybe a little bit, but if you look at the website, you'll kind of see that I must have grown up in Alaska and lived in different parts, you know, of the country.
I remember looking at the gallery and seeing things like the lake, which you said reminded you of Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And one of your more recent ones called Church in the Valley, which is real nice.
Oh, thank you.
You've got a whole gallery of all these thumbnail pictures, and then you just click on them and they turn into a real big picture that you can see some detail on.
That's right. Yeah, people need to know that because a lot of people don't realize that if you click on it, it will enlarge and then you can see the full painting.
You've got lots of stuff on the website. You've got some lyrics that I saw for some of your songs, pictures of you and different entertainers, a whole list of awards. Tell me about a couple of your favorite awards that you've won.
Oh, I don't know if that would be fair to say that any of them were my favorite because each award is special. I've done a lot of fundraisers, and a special place in my heart is for children, battered women, battered children, the homeless, and I've spent a lot of years doing fundraisers to raise money for some of those causes. And through music, I think that I've, you know, hopefully made a difference in somebody's life.
I think so. Have we missed anything on the website?
We have a newsletter that we compose whenever we have time, and that usually has an update, but I don't think I've been able to do that quite yet lately.
Do you have any upcoming concert dates that are listed on there?
They should be, but I was in the midst of a move in the past few months, and so was my son, the webmaster, so I wasn't able to get the concerts in there that we did. We recently were out in Las Vegas at the Silverton Hotel. We did the Cerritos Performing Arts Center. We did a couple up in the high desert, Victorville, Hesperia area. Cinco de Mayo, we were at Rialto City Park, and it was a whole day of barbecuing and wonderful music all day long.
And for the latest concert information, we can all check your website at www.rosieandtheoriginals.com. Rosie, what about the latest CDs and or music that you have available now?
We've got on Ace Records, and I know that it can be purchased through Amazon and Yahoo, I'm not sure, Amazon, and in some of the Tower Records, I believe, maybe Sam Goody's, I'm not sure. It's imported from England on Ace, and it's called The Best of Rosie and the Originals, but our newest CD, we had recorded and produced it ourselves, called Stepping Out in Style, features some songs that are remakes of some of our favorite oldies, and then it also features some of the songs that we've written ourselves. Myself, I wrote a song called Galleria Dreams, it's in there. Lost Illusions, it's in there. Angel Baby's in there in English and Spanish.
Oh.
And then my bandleader, James Bentley, has written the title song, Stepping Out in Style, because of the car clubs that supported us throughout the years. In a lot of wonderful concerts that we've done for them, whether it was a concert for fun in the park or whether it was a fundraiser for children. Every year we do toy drives for the car clubs for children. And James Bentley wrote For Love, that's a beautiful song. And what happened with that was Ace Records approached me again about 5 or 6 months ago and said, do you have new stuff that you want to, you know, let's do another CD. And I said, oh, that's wonderful. So I think they're going to call it Angel Baby Revisited. I'm not positive yet of the title, but it's supposed to be out July 30th or early August. And they've taken the Steppin' Out in Style album, and I believe there's 8 cuts off of that. And then they wanted me to get the best copy they could of Kinda Makes You Wonder from the Cal Globe,
mm-hmm.
You know, the old thing. And I had recorded something by Lulu, which was one of my favorite artists. What was the name of it? I Could Never Miss You More Than I Do. And there's a few other obscure things that were never released on that. And here's the real kicker. I know you're going to love this. About 15 years ago, there was a gal going around in Long Island, New York, with a group, and she was Rosie of Rosie and the Originals. She was doing television shows and radio interviews. She even recorded on a label called Starlight, and it said Rosie and the Originals, and it really wasn't. And she did an a cappella version of Angel Baby, and dedicated to the one I love. So Ace Records says to me about a month ago, we also want to include those two a cappellas that you did on Starlight. And I said, I don't have a clue. I never did. So they said, well, surely you must remember. And I said, no, I never did an a cappella version of those two songs. So they mailed me a cassette of it, and I listened to it, and it was that same gal from a long time ago. And, you know, they say that impersonation or imitation is the biggest flattery that you could ever have bestowed upon you. So I wasn't mad or anything. It was just kind of amazing to me that this gal was, you know, doing this.
Kind of disconcerting probably a little, huh?
It was kind of strange, but she was done with that portion of her life, I suppose, because I never heard anything more about it. But meanwhile, they said to me, do you guys want to record those two songs? Because then we'll put that little story in there. And I said, well, okay. So we just finished that. That got mailed off about 3 weeks ago, I think. And now they've got it. And that's on the CD also. Angel Baby with a cappella, you know, the doo-wop background and all that. And dedicated to the one I love. And I thought they came out really nice.
Great.
I don't like to brag. I'm fairly modest. I'm sure people will like them.
And again, that's supposed to be released into July then.
Yeah.
Be looking forward to that. Do you have any other projects, a screenplay maybe in the works?
Oh, you know, that's just been going on forever. About 89, I started writing my life story. Then I was put in touch with a couple of writers. And it seems like I went through two or three different writers, and I didn't like the way it was flowing because, not because they weren't good writers, simply because they were not from the era, or perhaps they were not from a mixed background like myself, and I'm Hispanic, and my mom's Hispanic, and my dad was German, Scotch, and Irish. And there's just this certain way that you would write or describe things, depending on where you came from or how you were raised. And I didn't see it flowing correctly, and we couldn't get the communication flowing. So each time the writer tried, I wasn't happy with it. We couldn't get it worked out. So I finally just kind of took it back and took it upon myself to, that's my project. I'll finish it sooner or later. And I had shopped it around for a while. I was hoping that somebody'd want to pick it up and do a movie on it, but of course I've always been that way, you know, do things backwards. You know, it's supposed to be a book first and then a movie later, I guess. That's the way it usually goes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm still working on it. I just haven't had the time to take off and complete the writing on it. And I do have a good friend up in your area. He wrote for Rock and Blues News. And I think they just kind of stopped. They no longer exist. But he did the most extensive article anybody has ever done on me, and it was so precise and correct, and he did his homework. And I had asked him that possibly he would like to be co-writer. His name is Opal Nations.
Opal Nations. He had a radio show over in the Bay Area for quite some time that was quite good.
Mm-hmm.
I know who he is.
Wonderful historian, isn't he?
Oh, he's excellent. He's just, he's an encyclopedia.
Yeah.
Rosie, you were the first Hispanic female artist inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yes, and I'm very proud of that. I've never received, actually, the official induction with the celebration and all that, but I am in there in the one-hit wonder section, and I'm right next to Phil Phillips with Sea of Love.
Mm-hmm.
And when you view my part there, it plays Angel Baby, and I went to see it, and I was very proud.
That's definitely a big honor.
It is.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell the listening audience, any other new projects or anything else that I may have missed?
Gosh, there's so many things going on, and here I am, you know, older, and I'm just as busy as I was when I was young. That's real good, and I'm very happy about it. I can only sit and reminisce and think, you know, just to myself, I think, and sometimes express it, that had it not been for that first song, and had it not been for all the fans that have been so wonderful throughout the years, and have really just, I don't know, I guess I touch people's hearts in some way, but they don't know how much they have touched me. like at every concert. If it wasn't for everybody that's been a fan of ours, I wouldn't be here still and talking to you on the radio. And I just want to say thank you to everyone.
Well, we certainly appreciate the great music, and boy, we just hope that you have the best of success in the coming years with your different projects that you've got. And it sounds like besides being busy that you've got stuff that you're doing that's interesting and that you really like.
I hope that I could get some more time so I can do some more painting, but you know, it looks like our summer's going to be filled up with concerts, which I love equally. And so I just hope that the listening audience will appreciate the music that we've written lately. And we do intend to get this one out with Ace Records, and we're going to start on another project of recording in about 2 months, because most of us write music, we all sing in the band, and I've got a ton more of songs to express, and so I hope that people look forward to that and, you know, like it, because I'm not going to go way out there or anything. I'm going to pretty much stick to my inner feelings.
Well, that sounds excellent. And I think, again, that if people want to keep up with what you're doing, the key is to get to your website at www.rosieandtheoriginals.com.
That's right. And please encourage people, or I will encourage people, to go to the forum and ask questions or leave messages or say something in the guest book.
Very good. Well, Rosie, thank you very, very much for taking time out to do this interview with me and to share all this information with the listening audience.
Thank you, Brian. I really appreciate it also.
That's Rosie Hamlin of Rosie and the Originals, that scored a number 5 hit in 1961 with Angel Baby and continues to record today.